Good evening, dear friends, and thank you for joining us again this week for another Gnostic Lab of Practical Application. And today, we have a Gnostic Lab that is slightly different from all the others that you may have experienced. Because in this particular one, what we will do with you is that we will share with you some instruction. And as parents do with their children, as teachers do with their kids and their audience in the classroom, share the instructions and allow them to go out and do. And this is what we will like to do specifically with this topic, because this topic is, how is it that we can comprehend the Gnostic doctrine? Because comprehending the Gnostic doctrine requires of an internal effort. We cannot just make the habit that many of us have, or had had for many years, of just grabbing one of Samael's books and pretend to read it from cover to cover as if we were reading a novel made of different chapters. Because as you have seen by now, when you grab books like the Esoteric Treatise in Rune Magic, when you grab a book like the Treatise in Occult Medicine and Practical Magic, when you have in your hands a book like Revolutionary Psychology or The Revolution of the Dialectic, the Fundamental Education, you will notice that there is no consistency from one chapter onto the next one. You would digest a whole chapter, and you suddenly walk out of there with a topic that has to do with psychology. And the next chapter is anthropological in nature. And after you go from psychology to anthropology, that is, of course, art and science, then you get into a chapter that has to do with some kind of old history from the Aeneid or some other narrative that comes from the many legends that adorn the wisdom of Gnosis and turn it into parables to give them unto the people. So when you do that and you're going from chapter to chapter, you know, just hammering the material like that, by the time that you are done with the book, we have to be honest with ourselves. We start walking out with very little. However, there are segments from the chapters. There are some chapters that impact us stronger than others, that resonate very deep within our own consciousness. Many of those effects of resonance within, they bring light into our own ignorance. And in many cases, they add certainty into things that we had already experienced or things that we knew, but we did not know with certainty that we knew them until somebody told us that we indeed knew them and that we knew them well. And when that kind of thing happens, there is a very peculiar manifestation of the personality that takes place, that if we are not watchful, we make the mistake of falling onto it and becoming very difficult people without even realizing. And that is the Kalkian personality. This Kalkian personality is, we must say, very dangerous. Because it is true that the Kalkian personality is a victim of self-deception. But we have to ask ourselves, how much self-deception? Maybe we have to ask ourselves, how deep is the self-deception? Maybe we have to ask ourselves, when is it that that self-deception becomes evident that allows the Kalkian personality to manifest? Or maybe we have to ask ourselves all of these questions together. Because when the Kalkian personality manifests, because it is under the influence of self-deception, the Kalkin personality is convinced that it already knows it, or that it already knows everything that there is to know about that, and thus it's no longer interested, or it is completely knowledgeable about the fact that it is impossible for it to learn that, and then creates a wall. In one case, a wall that does not allow the wisdom to come in, and in another case, another that creates a wall that does not allow the opportunity to refine the wisdom that it has received. And this becomes a very challenging thing. And what we seek to do with the few minutes that we're going to spend today is, number one, help you gain enough awareness so that you can understand when this particular trait of self-deception of the Kalkin personality immediately becomes present, so that you can detect it. And that as you detect it, not that you reject it, not that you force with it, that you get into this mental quarrel and fist fight and that you try to plow through it, because, you know, the hard way, things never work well the hard way. We have already experienced that in our lives so many times. But rather that you can detect this, so that as you perceive it, that you can be there and confront it. But listen to this. When we say confront, this does not mean that we're going to cross our arms on our chest and we're going to stare at the Kalkin personality and we're going to tell it, because that doesn't work. We're also not going to try to convince it or justify it or maybe compare it, because comparisons are abominable. We have already learned this. When we say confront, that means so that you have the ability to be there and perceive. That you can be there without flinching. That you can be there without reacting by the thoughts and the emotions that evoke the Kalkin personality. That you do not react to the sensations in the body that come from that very same self-deception. And a good example of the Kalkin personality, well, we see this all the time in the lectures around astral travel. Because people say, oh, the lecture in astral travel, I know there's so many keys, I already know this. You relax your body, you wait, and as you're relaxing your body, you remain watchful, and you wait for the first images, and you stand up, and you jump, and bam, you're in the astral plane. People know this in here. They know the sequence of steps. However, they have not experienced conscious astral travel yet. And they deprive themselves of the opportunity to be able to receive this wisdom on a new unit of time. Actually receive this wisdom with a fresh alert novelty, a fresh alert perception that may perhaps clarify for them something that they were doing inadvertently wrong and not letting them unfold consciously. But they say, astral travel, oh, I know that. I'm not going to participate. The same thing happens with lectures like alcoholism, with lectures like learning how to listen, with lectures on the chakras, etc., etc. You see, lectures that many of them exist at the pre-chamber level. And let us tell you this. What we have seen is that the way that these lectures and these materials are prepared, when second chamber students of the advanced level, get the opportunity of coming and paying a visit and participating again of the lecture, the images in the background then speak different to them. And they start noticing symbols that they had not seen before. And they can then extract the gnosis from those symbols, that art, They can combine it with the science that they are receiving, and all of a sudden it becomes a beautiful transaction that is of a philosophical nature. They can then express their love for the wisdom itself. And as they do that, they say, oh, you know what? I had not realized that. And it gives them that opportunity. But know that if at any time, whether it is in a conversation with someone, in a lecture, whether it is a chapter in a book, you see that there is an immediate guttural reaction to reject it. That is a Kalkin personality. If you find yourself skimming through the paragraphs, seeing, just going through the motion of reading the first sentence to decide if this paragraph is interesting enough for you to dedicate the 30 seconds to read it or not, that is the Kalkin personality. When all of a sudden you find yourself facing a difficult circumstance in life, and the friend offers you the best that they can give you, emanating directly from their heart with the intent of helping, with the intent of giving you an additional word that can maybe inspire you and help you regain your strength so that you can continue in a battle. If at that moment, what you hear, and you immediately say, yeah, it's not that. Or you're fixed in your thoughts, things are not just the way that you see them. And if you say if you feel the urge to say any one of those things, you may be deep in your own self-deception. And you would become a victim of your own Kalkin personality. So this is important. And if the Kalkin personality is present, we cannot comprehend the Gnostic subjects, because the ego is constantly translating. And we have an ego that becomes very, very clever. Last night, in our intermediate level lectures, as we were covering the topic of one of the chakras, we were speaking about the Hindi representation of Christ, which is Vishnu. And in the legend that we were sharing, we were looking at a dynamic that happened between the gods and the demons, where the demons invaded a part of heaven, and when the Christ was asked to intervene, he said, you need to go out and work with the waters. It is a beautiful legend. But one thing that happens is that through that legend, the shape and the form and the context of the cosmic Christ, of Vishnu, in two different instances, converts itself into different things. In one instance, it turns itself into a turtle, and in another instance, it turned itself into a beautiful damsel, a beautiful princess. And when he turned itself in a beautiful princess, what that form of the Christ, that expression of the Christ did, is that it invited all of those demons to dance, because the demons became mesmerized with her beauty. And as the demons started dancing, that representation of that eternal feminine took a container with the elixir of life and stole it from the demons and gave it once again to the gods. What the story tells us is that we need to develop a very peculiar sagacity. When we say sagacity, think of a cat, think of a tiger, as they are getting ready to pounce, as they are cleverly moving quietly in ways that are very delicate and refined, so that the prey is never aware of their presence. And we have to develop that type of mental sagacity when it comes to the ego. Because the ego is too clever. Clever enough that the ego can appear as a saint. Ego can appear as an angel. It can appear as a great master. But one thing that we have learned about the ego is that the egos are devilish in nature. And we cannot think that because they're devilish, that they're always creating, you know, ruckus and chaos and disorder, because they will do that. But Samael shares with us many stories in which he presented himself into temples. And as he listened to the words of the officiant, a man with his long silver hair, with his fine, chiseled, very refined nose, speaking of the Christ, he came to realize that he had walked into temples of the dark arts, temples of the dark magic. And the moment that he noticed that, and in one of his anecdotes, he says that he raised his fist and he said, "Long live the Christ." And as he said that, all of those who were present, they immediately turned around and faced them, and their faces transitioned from faces of calmness and serenity into the faces of furious demons. Because even those things that are not from those constructive forces of the light, they will tend to use words like love and kindness and compassion. And they will speak of sacrifice, and they will remember the great heroes of humanity. But ultimately, their teaching will be directed towards the darkness. And they will seek to create separation. So the ego is constantly intervening. And for us, the ego is constantly translating. If you have been diligent with your work, the ego today may not be the same as the ego a couple of years ago. And as you re-listen to the material, you give yourself an opportunity to be able to extract something new. But also, because you know that the ego is listening, you can always give yourself an opportunity to start listening with the consciousness. And the moment that you can perceive that little internal reaction of lack of interest, of just dissing and bypassing, of just not caring, maybe even rolling your eyes, then you can already see that there is an unwelcome host that has come to create the disruption that it seeks to. And it will always do that. Because the ego, the better you get at understanding the doctrine and putting it into use, the more clever the ego will become trying to lure you away from the great opportunities that stand before you. And we need to learn to see how the ego operates, so that we can use its very own tools against it. Which is the same story of Vishnu turned into this beautiful princess, using the tools of distraction and sensation and laziness to get those demons and convince them to not guard that container with the elixir of life, but rather just to start dancing with her. And that's what they did. And as they were dancing, Vishnu took the container, and without fighting them, he handed it to the gods. And then the demons were like, "Wait a minute, what happened here?" So we have to be very mindful of this. Who is listening? And that means that we must remain present. So when it comes to understanding the Gnostic topics, we have to make an effort to remain present. But this idea of remaining present and maintaining the quote-unquote remembrance of self, many students make the mistake of thinking that this is part of a task. You see, they think, today I have to meditate. So I have to look at my calendar and we're going to segregate an hour for meditation today. You see, they see it as something that they have to do, like something else that has to be added to the many things that happen during the day. And when we take that perspective, well, we know that life is also a game of priorities. And the fact is that priorities will come around, and with the ego always intervening, you know, the time for meditation starts coming and just falling down at the bottom of the list. Because, of course, we have to do the dishes, and of course, we have to clean, and of course, we have to cook, and of course, we have to put the children in bed, and of course, we have to take care of the pets, and of course, we have to make the house ready for the next day. And by the time we look, we say, it's already 11 o'clock. I am so tired. I will meditate tomorrow. This is what happens. So we have to stop looking at these things as if they were more things that we have to do. And we have to develop the habit of all of these things being part of our daily activity. Those of you advanced students who have already heard the many stories of the master Wu Wang and Tian Shang and all of those great masters of meditation that we speak in our seminars in our second chamber and in our first chamber, you will all remember that all of those masters became very good at the practice. And even their own masters told them, you are doing phenomenal in the practice, but you're still missing it in the activity. So if you happen to find yourself wandering around the shopping mall and you're thinking about the groceries that you need to get, well, in reality, we are wherever our consciousness is. Then that means that in that daydream, we are the grocery store. We're not at the mall. If we happen to be at work, and while we're at work, we are debating on what is it that we need to cook for dinner. And as we do that, we are revisiting in the mind all that inventory of utensils and ingredients that we have in the kitchen. Then we're evidently in the kitchen. We're not even at work. And this is why in the Zen Buddhism, from which all of these stories of the great masters Samael shares with us come from, they say, if you're going to eat, eat. And if you're going to get dressed, get dressed. But don't get dressed while you're eating. And don't eat while you're getting dressed. So we have to remain present. And this is why Samael says, this path of initiation, it is present in the gymnasium that is the home. Because that very same relaxed state of internal calmness, of being able to listen that we are seeking for in meditation, we have to bring this very same state to those times when we are tending to the children, to those times when we are taking care of the dishes, to those moments when we are sweeping the floor. Because in all of that, we find all of the ingredients for the initiation. So we must remain present. We have to learn to instantaneously disperse our attention, the subject, the object, and the location. And this is not another thing to do. This is not another checklist. This is simply take a moment and take a breath. And as you inhale through the nose, you know who the subject is. As you inhale and you fill those lungs with prana, in that instant you become aware of the impressions that are coming to you at that moment. Whether it is the temperature of the room or the voice of someone or the reaction that you got from the show on the TV or whether it is the voice of the neighbor or the barking of the dog, it doesn't matter what it is. You immediately understand what those impressions are. And because you are centered at that moment, it becomes very easy to raise the consciousness to the level of those circumstances so that you can filter the impressions. And as you do that, you naturally, without any effort, you see how that affects your thinking. You see how that affects your emotion. You start seeing how those egos start tinkering within the human machine. And of course, when you look around and you ask yourself, where am I? And you deliberately pull on your finger, you will see that you will create such a good habit that suddenly you're going to be in the astral plane. And as you do this, your fingers start stretching and you realize that you are out of your body. And this is how we start awakening consciousness from moment to moment. We just have to remain present. And the same thing happens when we're learning about these topics. Take a deep breath. And as you do that, allow yourself to be nourished with a prana. Observe momentarily. Just allow your consciousness to operate so that you can see what thoughts and emotions are happening there at the moment. It is true that sometimes those things are going to be so overwhelming that you're going to be identified and fascinated. It's going to be very difficult to get out of the sleep of the consciousness. But after all, this is a muscle that we have to work. So we have to remain present. We know that the ego is always listening and looking at creating division, at separating things, particularly those things that can help you make a change. And we know that the Kalkian personality is there just to say, not interested. I already know this. So when we put all these things together, this is how we can then get the most out of comprehending these Gnostic subjects. First of all, Samael says, don't follow me. He says, I am only a guidepost. And us instructors, as we start our new cycle, every time that a new year starts, well, we always remind people, thank you very much for coming to our lectures, but don't make yourself dependent on the lectures. We are here as an instrument to complement the material. But rely on that written word that Samael left behind, so that you can get that wisdom directly from what is the source. We are just an instrument, so don't follow us, because you're going to get lost. You see, this is what we all have to say this, because it becomes easy to create a good convenience. So look, with Samael saying, I am only the guidepost, and he shares with us only enough information so that we can develop what is known as the faith of longing. Because the faith of longing is the one that lets you see the experience of the masters and what you can anticipate. Also, so that when it happens to you, that you can immediately recognize it. That's very useful. So in that light, you receive all of this wisdom. And it is very common for students to be lured outside of the stream of this wisdom that Samael gives in Gnosis. Some people tend to think, I found this book and it says the same thing that Samael says. Or they say, I went to that group and the guy was saying the same thing that you said in the lecture that Samael wrote. And that is an incorrect perspective. Because when it comes to Gnosis, those of you who have seen the weekly picture that is published by the Institute, Gnosis is the doctrine of the Christ. The great master of masters, he came to give this wisdom, and in his parables, And in all of his teachings, what he gives is gnosis. And gnosis is the root wisdom of all of the world's great religions. So it is not a coincidence that you're there and you happen to hear something that says gnosis. The opposite is what is correct. That is saying that because that emerges as a branch of the tree that has a trunk and roots that are indeed gnosis itself. So when people see that, they tend to get distracted. Because they see commonalities, they tend to start believing that everything around them is immediately safe. And they start participating in meditation groups and listening to others. And as they do, they start hearing how others say, as I was meditating, I felt this light. Okay? Or you would hear somebody say, as I was meditating, I felt this presence here next to me that inundated me with peace. You say, fair enough. But when you hear that, there is an aspect of the Kalkian personality that would say, you don't know. Who are you to be judging? How would you know if they're saying the truth or not? That's fair enough too. But this is an indication that we have to learn to think. And Samael teaches us in one of those many lectures that he says something that is very profound and useful, and you have to be very watchful just to be able to grasp it, because otherwise it just flies by. He says, we need to learn to think. And to learn to think, you need to question, you need to inquire, you need to analyze, and you need to reflect. Because between question and inquiry, we have a dynamic in which you notice something that has somehow resonated within you. And as you inquire, you are seeking to penetrate deeper into that mystery to be able to comprehend it. As you penetrate into that mystery through your inquiry, you would receive back information that you will be capable of analyzing. But this analysis is not the analysis of a hypothesis that you would go and test. You see, in many cases that can happen. But this is an analysis that happens deep within the consciousness. Because this, what allows us to do is that it enables that instinctive capability of understanding the cosmic laws and mysteries. And as you receive that information, you can deeply reflect. And that reflection is reflection that can happen during the exercise of meditation. And through the intuits that you receive in your meditation, you will know of things to be true or not. So let's get back to our previous example on how is it that we need to learn how to think. In some instance, a person came around and they were speaking about their experience in meditation. And how was it that they meditated, and as they meditated, there was this angel that would stand next to them and they would feel the warmth, etc., etc. And as part of this exercise, we have to question ourselves, what about this experience? What could possibly be an element of self-deception behind an experience like this one? And of course, we're making this cathedratical for the purpose of the lecture, but this is an internal reflection that we all have to exercise. Because we all understand that the purpose of meditation is one. And the purpose of meditation is to calm ourselves. The whole purpose of meditation is to bring calmness into the mind, so that the mind is no longer projecting Because the moment that the mind calms down, that the physical body has been relaxed, and that the emotional center calms down as well, we transition into a heightened state of consciousness. Everybody knows this. This is something that has been demonstrated through science thoroughly. You know, there are many images and studies that you can see on monks who are wearing all of these helmets with all of these sensors, and they do scans, and they can see how their neural networks are firing when they are in these deep, deep states of relaxation, and when the mind is quiet. That is when its abilities become very active. If we know that the purpose of meditation is to calm down so that we can create a direct connection with our innermost, so that we can emancipate the consciousness and receive the experience of the illuminating void, an experience that is so shocking that those who experience it feel terror. It's a good terror. It is not like the Michael Myers kind of terror. It's not that. It is a really good terror, because the moment that they experience that they are not the ego, they immediately come back into the body like, oh, what was that? It is the phenomenal experience. So if we know that the purpose of meditation is to calm down, as we inquire, why would an angel stand next to me? What would be the purpose of me feeling a light, feeling heat, a vibration? Why would we think that if these great masters understand how difficult it is for us to even maintain the remembrance of self, if it is so difficult for us to even be able to pull out a few minutes of the day to dedicate to meditation, why would there be an angel rowdy enough to come and stand next to me and interrupt my practice and distract me? We have to ask ourselves these things. People sit down and meditate and they feel warmth. That's good. We experience that warmth with gratitude and with satisfaction, and we focus once again on the exercise to calm the mind. We have to be able to question, to inquire, to analyze, and to reflect. Some people may say, but what if it's really an angel? Okay. Well, at this public level, we don't speak much about certain things that we can do. But as we go into the intermediate levels, you know, we can always speak about, you know, conjurations and mantras and other things that are perfectly useful for these purposes. And if we don't have that, we can always refer to the same experience that Samael shares. Because at one time he said that he was doing a meditation, his innermost showed up, and he conjured the innermost. And there's a very powerful conjuration in which you invoke the force of Jupiter, the father of all the gods, and you say, I conjure you in the name of Jupiter, father of all gods, Tevigos Koslim. And you trace a very peculiar rune in the air of mystery. And as he did that to his innermost looked at him and went like, and then Samael realized, he said, no, I'm sorry, father, but we have to be watchful because this is treacherous. That's a teaching for us. So if you think there's an angel standing next to you, conjure it. Invoke the name of the Christ. And you'll be surprised how many times you think that around you are things that claim to be one thing, but in reality, they're nothing more than the many different expressions of the ego. And as you go through one or two experiences, you start becoming clever. You start developing that malice that is necessary to understand the tools of the ego and use them against it. Because in our nothingness, if a great master exercised that infinite kindness of materializing or presenting before ourselves, and we were to conjure it, it is more likely that they would look at us with even more kindness and more compassion than rather feel offended because who do you think that I am? Because that's not going to happen. And this is how we learn to think. We question, we inquire, we analyze, and we reflect. And as we read a chapter from Samael's book, we question, we analyze, we inquire, and we reflect. So that means that we dedicate some time to the content of that chapter. We dedicate some time to the content of the lecture. And you can go about the question and the inquiry during your day. As you sit down in your blue time and you close your eyes, this is a good moment to go back and revisit that thing that you read, that thing that you heard. And as you intuitively clarify what comes out of this exercise of thinking, then take the material and run it through an exercise of retrospection. And go back through it. Go back from the end of the material and see how much of it you actually recall. Because as you do this, all of a sudden you will find that you have questions. That there are things that you could understand maybe a little better. And at that moment, inquire. Analyze. Reflect. That is what we do. And if not, write down your question and send it to me by email. And if we don't have an answer, we will find the right answer for you. Or wait until the next lecture. Post it on the screen. We will gladly discuss it. But do that exercise of retrospection. Because when you do this exercise, you are taking that teaching and you are depositing that in your consciousness. Because we cannot rely on the mind. Because friends, if we were to die today, and all that we have is just a good mental recollection of the lectures and the books and the materials, the moment that the ray of death strikes, it is so intense that the memories, they dissipate. And then when you come back, you just don't remember. When you come back, you have to start all over again. And that is a very unfavorable situation. So let's recap what we heard today. Okay? As we're talking on this subject of comprehending the Gnostic doctrine, we want to make sure that we are very watchful so that we can identify those markers of the Kalkian personality. We know that the Kalkian personality characterizes itself because it is a victim of self-deception. There is nothing more dangerous than an aspirant to become a Gnostic student who has fallen into the space of self-deception and that they are unwilling to change their way of thinking. That becomes very destructive. So we know what the pointers are of the Kalkian personality. Now that we know them, we can identify them when they appear. It is very clear to us that the one who is listening is our ego. There are values that are positive and values that are not positive. And we have some values that have strong affinity with Gnosis. We are trying to override them and bring those teachings directly to the consciousness so that they don't stay within that mind of the ego. And there are other values that are negative that would do whatever they can to create dissent and separation. So the ego is constantly translating. And it will translate based on its conditioning. So that means that we have to break through the conditioning of the ego and we have to make an effort so that we can remain there present, watchful, so that we can see how it influences the thought, the emotion, the habits. Because as we do this, we can look at what we have read, what we have learned. We can check that against that background of our experience, and we can question, we can inquire, we can analyze, we can reflect. And this brings us that depth of comprehension. This is what helps us deeply comprehend those Gnostic topics. As we have done this, let's do some retrospection. Let's revisit the material. Because as we go back, it is likely that a question may arise as well that will invite us into even expanding that quality of thought. And eventually, we will be able to just find the condition of pratyahara, no more thinking, of allowing the consciousness to operate purely without interruption, without interference. Between now and that state, there's still a path that we still have to walk. So we need to make the most of the tools and what we have been given to do the work. We need to make use not only of our common sense that everybody has heard that does not seem to be too common these days. We don't need to emphasize any of that. But we certainly have to emphasize the good quality of thought. We question, we inquire, we analyze, we reflect, and we retrospect. So dear friends, this is what we wanted to share with you today in this Gnostic Lab. As we told you earlier, a very different approach this week when it comes to practicality. But now that you know this, we invite you, just put it to use. Not just today, every day. Dear friends, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And may all beings be happy.